Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much in the way you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, I want to thank you very much for your introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to share with you tonight that we will be joined by John, and he will be arriving in about 15 minutes, give or take. In the meantime, I'm going to focus on the one thing that we all need to understand first, and it was best said by a judge in 1901. This was a Supreme Court justice. His name is John Marshall Harlan. And the case that he ruled in jointly was Downs versus Bidwell. You've all heard that. And the reason why we need to focus on it, because he predicted where we are today, over 120 years ago. He said, "The idea prevails with some. Indeed, it has found expression in arguments at the bar that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of the restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument." And here is what should be carved in stone. The Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to. Let me expand on that a second. We talk about American exceptionalism. The Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Ordinance, a constitution for the United States of America. These founding documents established the people of this nation as the sovereignty. There exist no powers outside of the people that the people have not otherwise delegated. So if the people have delegated it, then those powers are delegated. They're not given away. They're not surrendered. They're delegated, meaning they can be pulled back. Sure, you can borrow my car. Here are the keys. Bring it back with at least as much gas as you took off with, whatever. And then if I find your behavior in my car, your squealing tires or whatever, well, you're not going to have it. I'm taking my keys back. Simple as that. All the countries in the world, throughout the history of man, there's always been one despot or an oligarchy of despots or a monarchy that was, and all of these can be good or bad, but the people are always subject to the rule or the rulers. in Romans 13. I got to tell you a quick story. I had a ball one day in court. I have to confess, I haven't been in court in, 40 years, something like that, or 35 years, something like that. But prior to that, I was quite active. I enjoyed going into court. I would, I'd pull the tag off my car just to get the blue light on or whatever, just to, and the reason was is because I had fun in court and practicing. It didn't hurt me. There's nothing in traffic court that can actually hurt you if there's no damages, really. And I won sometimes and I lost sometimes, but I learned every time. Let me grab this again. Just flip my head. Gosh, I'm getting funny on my age. I just lost it. What was it? I wanted to tell you this. It was important. Well, I'm sorry. We're just going to have to come back to it. Anyways, the point being is that in our rights, whether it is to travel or whatever exercise of rights we want to do, everything is predicated on jurisdiction. Everything. And it's imperative that we keep the courts on point with jurisdiction and not allow them to move off of it. Only here in the United States of America, and I'm referring to the de jure republic, do we have the right to exercise these liberties with impunity. The quote continues and says, I take leave to say that if the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of the majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system of government will result. We will, in that event, pass from the era of constitutional liberty, guarded and protected by a written constitution, into an era of legislative absolutism. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of the principles of the Constitution, end quote. The fun that they have with us is based upon the definitions of words between the bane, the vulgar, the common word and the meaning that we have in society, and what the words mean within the law. This quote that was just given talks about how the Congress acts outside. There are three definitions of the United States. So anytime that anyone in authority, if you would, asks if you are a United States citizen or any other United States being an adjective to the subject, you must always inquire of their stipulation of which definition they're in reference. The second definition of United States in Black's Law and also in the Hooven decision of 1945 and the Bidwell decision of 1901 that we're talking about here says it may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. So when a court, a judge says, well, this is my courtroom, well, that's because he's determined or deemed that court to be a United States court. And it is his courtroom if that's the case. But is that courtroom on United States land? Did the offense occur by a United States person, or was it one of the people? So it's imperative that we always ask and demand in ways that are without being rebarbative and without being mean about it. John is very much of a soft touch with regards to dealing with the adversary. Or is it the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution? Since we have those definitions so clearly and starkly established, how can we possibly mount a defense as a defendant, regardless if it's IRS or traffic or a criminal charge? How can we mount a defense if we do not understand the nature and cause of the charges against us? And the nature and cause, the nature has to do with whether it's land of the United States or land of the several states. Am I being addressed as a person of the United States or one of the people of the several states in the Union? The thing that we talk about on Monday nights, correcting our status, is absolutely critical to all of us in having the record established of who we are and moving from there. Understand that when you do get the passport from the State Department of the United States, the pass card, that is merely the product of you having corrected your status. When you file the affidavit with the State Department of the United States, which I handle for you basically, when that's filed and you have proof of receipt, which can be simply the receipt from the post office, or I think from here on out I'll be doing the green cards, so I have a signature as well. The point is that at that point your status is corrected. And that affidavit is the same affidavit that you can use throughout the rest of your life. And it doesn't have to be the original affidavit that was signed in, you know, spring of 2022. It could be one that you just signed today or the one that you will sign next year in the future. That is your declaration. And it requires, for it to be void, it requires what's called authenticated evidence. In fact, self-authenticating evidence is required. And testimony with someone who has firsthand knowledge that rises to that level of authenticated evidence in their testimony by way of their affidavit and their testimony from the stand, the witness stand. You having the opportunity to cross-examine them. How do you have firsthand knowledge? How does it come to you? Well, I read it on a computer screen. You did. And that gives you firsthand knowledge? Have the computers that you read from, have they ever been hacked at all, ever? Do they ever go down for maintenance? How do you know that that's a true statement? Well, because I saw it on the Internet. Okay. Point being is that you are the only one that can actually give testimony that rises to the level of authenticated evidence in a courtroom. You're the only one. And no matter how much a judge may badger you, ridicule you, impugn your mental capacity, you know, the question that I'd be asking the judge if they started to rip into me is, Your Honor, do you have firsthand knowledge? Are you going to step down from the bench and take the witness stand and go under oath to swear to what you've just said from the bench? Anyways, I see that John has arrived. Tonight's focus is the IRS. And I'd like John to share with you some stories about his students in the past, without naming names, of course. He won't name the names. And how the relationship between the charitable religious trust, the corporation soul, and correcting your status has influenced prior students' cases and possibly present and future student cases. John, welcome.
Good evening, Michael. Thank you for your kind and gracious introduction, sir.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I had a hard day at the office. A judge today turned down three motions that in all normal cases should have been granted and in which technically the judge does not have the say-so to overrule him. And as a matter of fact, it's just courtesy that's going through him. It's not even within his purview. And I had the dubious honor and privilege of speaking with not one but two SATAs today. Special Agent, Treasury Agent, SATA. And the term special agent means they're trained and they carry a firearm. You know, which in most cases for a long time the Treasury Department was not allowed to carry firearms, except that nowadays they've become a little bit more unkind and crude and cruel, and they have a tendency to, you know, all of us like to believe that we have some value and some merit, and to that end, all of us like that our self-worth is very important to us. And to those of us who don't have any natural self-worth, you can usually tell those individuals, they, you know, you can put them down and they'll say, gosh, how kind of you to say so, you know. Thank you for your overly thoughtful words. But somebody who doesn't have much self-worth, there's anything that calls anything into question, they get very defensive, and two out of three times they'll lash back by calling into question another person's self-worth or their integrity. And Treasury agents are given a lot of authority, and there's a lot of people that you've probably heard in the past the idiom about the individuals who went into law enforcement so they could brandish what little power they could, and feel like they were judge or just Sheriff Buford T. Justice. Well, one thing about folks in the Treasury Department is that they're nonetheless the same way. Now, you go give a box boy or a bellman, you know, they bring your luggage out to your car or put your groceries in the trunk. And, you know, you give them a couple of dollars, you know, they really appreciate that, and they know they're appreciated. They do a good job. They do a really super good job, especially the bellman. And it's amazing sometimes the tips that you can get, or a hostess in a restaurant. You know, they do a really good job. They get rewarded and really appreciated. A law enforcement officer or IRS agent, they do a really good job, and somebody wants to stick a .38 caliber straw in their face and ask them to suck on it. Very counter-motivating. It's very, very important that we recognize this. It's unbelievably important. Individuals, they get defensive, they get excited, combative, angry, meowchy, grouchy, oh man, you know, and then they start throwing things. Not really, hopefully not. But getting meowchy and grouchy part is genuinely real. And to that end, a lot of times, if they don't see something that's simple that they can lash out, maybe they had a hard day. Not at the office. I had a hard day at the office today. I've been blessed with some dubious character building exercises. I mean, and I am so tuckered and worn out right now that, you know, my body hurts. And but imagine when an IRS agent is doing an investigation, gets into a situation like this, and maybe their bad day didn't start at the office. Maybe it started at home. Maybe they just didn't get out of bed on the wrong side and rolled over Tweety Pie and made a mess and then spilled the hot coffee on them, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And commenso festival, their day began. And before they were able to shower, shave, shine water, and get fed, they had a rotten, not just a bad day, a rotten day. Maybe they didn't get any sleep, but but now it comes to you. Now, there's these games. One of them they call it Jenga, where you you take a rows of three little sticks and you turn them 90 degrees and you stack them up, and then you see how many you can pull out before the before the whole thing collapses down, and you're not allowed to take anything out of the top layer. Well, maybe you've been working on a puzzle or a Jenga or whatever, but when they come by, they don't even have to brush against it. They can just whish by and the wind will knock it over. You are unprotected. Maybe you've, cut some roses in the garden and, you know, you've got them stacked on the edge of the little wheelbarrow there, and it's on a little bit of an incline. Well, they don't even have to barely touch that wheelbarrow, and it starts to roll, and the roses end up on the ground and underneath the tires of the wheelbarrow. You were unprotected for something that you had no clue about how much fun you could really have or how bad it could get. You know, and some people, you know, they've come in and complained, and I just, you know, they've talked about how bad their day was, you know, and John, what's the matter? I says, oh, don't worry. It's much worse than you think. And then I explain and fill them in, on their visibility or their negative, adverse visibility. And it's, now when somebody, without even trying, has the capacity to topple you or just strike a pencil line in a box, and now an audit commences, and they go into investigations. And now, one thing that you need to learn is that these guys, theoretically, they are human beings just like you and me. Except that the challenge is that they've had a bad day. There's an old saying that says a gentle answer turns away wrath. You never, ever, ever fight fire with fire. Everybody goes away scorched. There is no happy campers out of that. It's serious. There's no happy campers. When it comes to dealing with these guys, oh, really? Yes, sir. Hey, you know what? Let me see if I can find that for you right away. And, oh, you know what? I would love to provide that for you. And if you could get me a warrant, that way I could justify that to my wife and my attorney, who already looks down on me because he says I don't exercise good legal judgment. But, you know, if you could, you know what? Make a list of what you want. Go get me a warrant, and we'll get it all ready. You know, and maybe I can have it ready for you when you come back with the warrant. You know, and but if you and if your smiles, it's hard for them. It's very hard for them to stay angry. It's like you going over and taking one of those valve core removers for tires, and going up and letting the valve stem out of their excitement. All of a sudden. And now it's peace and calm, and there's no more pressure running around. You know, and I've actually had a case where somebody was acting in the case. She and her counterpart were both female. They were there for an to start an audit and investigation. And Rose, at the time, she was 61 years old. She called me over and says, John, they're coming over, and they said they're good. They want all these records and this and that. You know, and luckily I got there like 10 minutes before they did. And Rose looked at me and she was in tears. She says, I don't know how to handle this. Her husband, Howard, had passed away about a year earlier. And they were claiming that there was inequities in the last return that he filed. Okay. We sat down, you know, I introduced myself. I'm Rose's friend. I was half her age at the time. I was less than half her age at the time. And She said you guys want to do look at some financial records. And he says, yes, we're here to, you know, they're conducting an audit and we're doing a survey and we're doing a survey of the property, you know. And I looked at it and I says, you know what? That sounds exciting and I would very much love to watch and Rose would love to watch. And before you trespass on private property, could you please, so that I can tell her attorney and everybody else that we followed the rules, that could you please just go get a bench warrant? You know, and they both looked at it and said, we don't have to have, we're the IRS. I says, ma'am, this is private property and we would love to help you out. And if you could get a bench warrant, you know, to search the property and define exactly what you're looking for, it would be our honor and privilege to assist you. And the lady looked at me and she was the special agent and she pulled back her jacket to make certain that I saw that she was wearing a Glock Model 17, you know, and had not one, not two, but three clips on the other side, you know, and I didn't make any comment about it. I says, you know what? And that way, anything you find, won't be fruit of the poison tree and you'll be able to go to your superiors and say, hey, if you found something, you found it and you got it and you've got legal justification to support so that it is now admissible in court. I says, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what you're both here for. You're investigating something so you could, you know, and if you find something, you want it to be admissible in court, right? And they both looked at me and go, well, duh, yeah. And I says, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it's in all of our best interest for, should we wait right here? Judge Kelly is on the bench right now. You can, and they both looked at me. I says, you know what? If you want, I'll call him up and see if we, you know, can speed your warrant up. And all of a sudden it was, no, we'll go get our own, you know, and it was, I says, well, gosh, you know, I'm sorry. We just want to make sure that everything works good for everybody, you know? And the lady says, who are you, mister? I says, you know what? I introduced myself, but I'm really nobody of any consequence. And, you know what? And I would love to make certain that things go absolutely perfect for you guys and that we can have the bestest relationship and that maybe even we can become lifelong friends. And the other special agent said, mister, in what version of hell are you discussing? I says, please don't let it be that because, technically this is a government, other people by the people for the people. You work, you're hired help working for the people. And I would wish to honor you with the respect that's due somebody who's willing to step up and wear a badge and wear a firearm in taking care of the, housekeeping that is required to help our government work. She looked at me and she says, you're for real, aren't you? And I says, and I went and pinched myself on the arm and I says, I says, ouch. I says, I think I am. And they disappeared. Rose, we immediately transferred the house that was completely paid for into an early form of what Justice Brashears offers now as a charitable religious trust and a corporation sole. And we used the two layers to do that so that one was administrating the other so that Rose had no direct interaction. Although she was the beneficiary, the mortgage had been paid off only about 4 or 5 years before he passed away. But, you know, she said, John, why do we need to do that? And back then I was doing them myself and setting them up. And I was using the state of Washington because there were no annual file report requirements for a Chapter 508. During those years back in the 70s and 80s, there was, and up through the, all the way up to the 90s and early, 00s, there was no reporting requirement in Washington, but we set this up and she fixed me a very, very wonderful breakfast or brunch, and we had everything filed, and I got on the phone and had a resident agent. Back then, we didn't quite have the FedEx and everything else. We had to use DHL back then, and this had been a few years, and they got it. Within 3 weeks, we had Rose set up. Well, nothing else seemed to show up for a while. A year and 10 months later, those two showed back up. This time they had a writ. They had a writ of seizure. They had a court order for search. They had everything. They crossed their T's and dotted their I's. And they came in and they started going through all of Rose's records, which I made certain that because he had passed away, that they all fit in one single orange crate on one shelf in the back bedroom at the desk, and that the desk was absolutely spotless. The pencil and pen set was the predominant occupant of the desktop. On their top drawer on the right, there was envelopes and stamps, and on the bottom left was a file drawer with letters from her sister or two sisters. But they came in, and within 10 minutes, they had satisfied themselves that they had found every record that could possibly be found in the house, including the previous, not 7 years, but 12 years of IRS. And he says, we've got penalties and interest here, and we're seizing the house. I says, really? I says, how can you do that? He says, I've got a writ right here, and we're seizing the house, and she's out. And I says, I don't understand. She says, what are you, hooked on phobics? What part of stupid don't you understand? And I says, and all of a sudden, the other one says, wait a minute. Why are you saying that? I says, well, the house is owned by a religious trust, and a corporation soul administers it. And she's a beneficiary, but she doesn't even own the furniture. I says, if you look very, very carefully, there's certified copies of the trust in that box you have right there. And the one young blonde, she was very attractive. She goes, holy shaving cream, Batman. And they went back in, and on Rose's kitchen table, they spread everything out, and they found out that Rose didn't even own the car in the driveway. This is in Southern California at the time. And one said to the other, one SA said to the other, says, well, we got the bank account. We can go after the bank account. I says, Rose, do you have your passbook handy? There was about $197 that was left over from her last Social Security check. And that was it was in the bank. And they says, well, you know, where is? And after five painstaking, long, patient, very patient, very respectful hours, the two SATAs decided to unload the box of documents that they had taken from Rose's house. They realized there was nothing there. In the midst of that, I says, how do we accrue these penalties and interest? Well, here's an accounting here. I says, do we have somebody that could certify that? What do you mean? We're the IRS. We don't have to. I says, yes, you do. And in a court of law, that's one thing that we'll be asked to do. And she says, well, I did the accounting myself. I says, I tell you what, there's a notary at the bank less than a block and a half from here. Could I have a copy? Can we have a copy, a photocopy of that? and could you sign and certify it and notarize it? What do you mean? I says, well, you know, you just, that gives us a starting place, you know, to work with you. And she goes, and about the time we got to the bank, I says, no, this is easy. You already get it. And I looked at her and I says, by the way, did you include the charitable deductions for the church and the fact that she donated all of her husband's tools and equipment to this religious organization and that there's over a $15,000 donation for their family van that they had that had less than 3,000 miles on it that they donated? It was a very rare Ford Club Wagon 15-passenger van. And I says that was modified with a tailgate lift for because her husband was wheelchair-bound, but they donated it to a ministry. Did you have those in there? Well, she says, how the frizzle should I have known about that? And I says, but you're certifying those numbers. Is that perjury? And I pulled out a photocopy, I says, and I showed her, to certify these numbers, you have to violate this statute right here. And I gave it to her, and I says, that's a second-degree felony. And she stopped the notary. She had already signed it. She stopped the notary from completing it, and she ripped up the accounting, threw it in the trash, and they both left. Although there was rumors, allegations that twice these two attempted to visit the house, but Rose wasn't home. They did not come on the property. They didn't even go to the front porch. They went right to the mailbox, to the gate. But things ended right there. Never even went into the office. Definitely didn't go to court. But they had created a monster of a penalties and interest and violation of this, violation of that, and wrongful accounting here and this and that. And they had a mountain, a monster that would have taken the house, possibly the car also as well. But the Rose may have planned a little bit ahead, and she died in that house 12 years later. You know, she was 73 when she passed away of normal causes. The neighbors went over to visit her. She just didn't answer the door. But she probably would have finished up her life in some type of home or something, or a ward of Adult Protective Services in California. I don't know if any of you know much about California, but there's an organization called Adult APS that likes to take people that have become destitute and take everything, including their social and security payments, and terminate their life. More recent had an individual that it was a miracle. He knew he kind of fudged things on his 03 return. In 07, we met and we talked and we were talking about CRTs and corpse souls, and I happened to mention some of that about protection. I did not know that he had fudged his 03 return. He fudged it really serious. But he was excited about the corpse soul and the charitable religious trust. And we worked things out for him, got him taken care of, and we actually set up multiple trusts, one for the vehicles and for the two vehicles, and one for everything that the children had. 2 years later, a year before the statute of limitations was about to expire, because back then it was 7 years, he got a visit from not one, not two, but eight armed, in uniform, tactical crisis management, with two suits, one female, one male. They were there to seize the house, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He had her call me. I got there kind of late. I actually, it was like a 3.5 hour drive for me to get to their place. It was up in Fort Worth, Texas, and I'm down in the Houston area, and, got up there, and they had already, they had already backed up a truck to the garage, and they were starting to empty the personal belongings. And I says, guys, I says, what's going on? He says, you can't be here. This is a, and the couple and their three children were still there. And they says, I'm sorry, this is an IRS seizure. You can't be here. And this was serious. This was, you know, and I says, the IRS is seizing the property of, Winsong, Religious Trust. And he says, who the frizzle is that? I says, that's the owner of this property. No, it's not. These guys, I says, are you certain about that? I says, I happen to have copies of the articles of incorporation right here. He says, who are you? And I says, I'm really nobody of any consequence, but these people don't own this house. They're paying monthly, according to this agreement here, they're paying $1,110 a month lease payment for this property. And this trust over here holds those two cars, of which they're paying $400 a month lease for. And this guy who was in hard tack here, the only thing he wasn't wearing was his helmet. But he called both suits over, and we talked. And this was like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. About 2 o'clock in the morning, they unloaded their moving van. They packed up and they left. There have been times when somebody didn't know what the right thing to say was. They didn't know how to explain that they had already had some protection. They ended up in court. If you end up in court, it's much harder to explain issues regarding who is actually holding the property and why they're holding it. So what happens is that I don't know if any of you believe in a higher power or an intelligent designer for this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home, but I'm also a physicist, and I've seen way too much evidence that there's an intelligent designer out there. And out of all the accounts, and whatever you want to call that intelligent designer, ET, space aliens, Yeshua, Yahweh, God, ghost, whatever, spirits, you know, whatever you want to call them, that intelligent designer is out there. And of all the descriptions, all the historical documents, and just because a historical document has some religious bias does not mean that the historical renditions referenced therein are all bad or even any bad. You know, man made God in his own image. You know, a lot of us, you know, we like to believe we're something special, and we'll, you know, we even created religions, and there's a few out there that there's a single person, but there's only one historical religious path that the individual involved claimed he was either God or the Son of God, and he came with some pretty intense credentials. He raised the dead, he healed the sick, lame walked, and the blind saw, and he even raised himself from the dead. And that's in those Hebraic writings. And I don't use the term Jew because that's only one of the 14 tribes. And some people say, John, there's only 12. Not. And I can prove it in less than 1 minute. There's actually 14. But there's a saying in there. It says, when you're being carried off to the magistrate, settle with your opponent before you get there, lest your opponent hand you over to the magistrate and the magistrate hand you over to the jailer, and you should be put in jail until every last penny should be paid. If you have everything planned ahead, if you've taken the time to listen to Michael's training and Justice Brashear's, some of us lovingly call him Bernie. That's his first name, Bernard. Justice Brashear's, he lays an incredibly wonderful foundation that if you're totally aware of that, regardless of like what Mike did, and Mike in 03 knew he colored outside the lines. He didn't tell me. He didn't tell me until after, almost a week after I got back from Fort Worth. But if you've taken the time to set up and prepare, it's amazing what you can do. There's a whole lot more of this that I don't know if we even have the time, but I'll just touch on it. I'll just touch on the tip of the iceberg. When you look at the Constitution, it's very, very clear that pardon me, my humble apologies. I'm building a little teensy bit of character today. Part of it is also a little bit of health issues. The hard day at the office that started pretty early, but there's if you go to the Constitution and you're in as you begin to review that in Article 1, Section 9, it talks about the government, the United States, or actually it's Section 8, but it says to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever do it though the district not to exceed 10 miles square as it may by secession of particular states and to the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States and to exercise like authority over all places. Okay, it's in identifying that the Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, is the seat, and that is the responsible territory for with which that the government of the United States directly affects. And some people say, well, John, there's a lot more to it than just that. And I say, you're absolutely right. And Article 4, Section 4, the first paragraph, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government. Oh, wait a minute. You mean the United States is different than the several states? Holy shooting cream, Batman. Oh, don't worry. It's much worse than you think. As you go into Article 6, the senators, paragraph 3, the senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states. It's saying that there are two separate entities here. Both of the United States and the several states will be bound by an oath of affirmation to support the Constitution. Okay, what's extremely, extremely important here is that as you go through this, it says the amendment number 9, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights should not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Holy broken tree feathers, Batman. You mean there's rights that predate, that are preeminent to the Constitution, and that people had before? Isn't that interesting? When we get down to brass tacks and you go to the Declaration of Independence and in the in paragraph 2, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their creator. Whoops, ho! This is a religious government that's recognizing a creator? Holy kitty litter, Batman. I didn't know that. There's a little bit more here. They're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are the right to life. Wait a minute. Among these. So you're saying this is from a larger pool of rights? That's what the writer, the one that penned this, is saying, that among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Abraham Lincoln at the Gettysburg Address did not just pull the of the people, by the people, for the people out of the air. This is where it came from. These rights are preeminent and predate the Constitution. It's very, very important. And in Amendment Number 10, it says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited to it by the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Very important. The 16th Amendment, that's a housekeeping item on this one for the United States of America, that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on income from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to the census or enumeration. You remember a little while back in Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, it says, it talked about the difference between the United States and the several states. Very, very, very important. It says the United States shall guarantee to every state in the union a republican form of government. By the way, nowhere in any document issued before 1914 did any of our forefathers pen the word democracy. Nowhere. This is a republic. Democracy is a majority rule, or some people call it mob rule, but republican form is based on godly precepts. There is a, in this case, biblical standards. But the thing is that the United States shall guarantee to every state in the union. Oh, there's two separate entities there. Imagine that. Well, the United States itself can tax its own people and own residents, and that's what the 16th Amendment is for. And that's the way the computers are set up. They and somebody just trying to be nice to everyone just tabulated everybody as an occupant or a resident of the United States of America. Not an American national as a resident of an individual or an occupant of an individual state. If any of you sat on the calls that GW does, GW goes to helps individuals through the process of you don't actually change your status. You're correcting the documentation of it. Your status doesn't change. You're still you. You're still an American national. You still lay your head in Alabama or Iowa or Muskogee, Oklahoma or wherever, you know. It's just that now you've got documentation that in certain cases, even there have been a lot of cases where law enforcement officials realized that, oh, I'm sorry, sir, somebody that was doing a teeny-weeny bit over the speed limit, he was doing 115 in a 65. They had him in cuffs in the car. He says, here's my ID, you know, and could you please run that? But before he called the tow truck, he called friends. There were like four patrol cars there. They had him in the back, they handcuffed him. They blessed him with a set of matching bracelets. And all of a sudden, he was looking this thing up and he ran the mag strip on the card. And then he got out of the car and he talked on the phone for a very long time, argued with the person on the phone. All of a sudden, says, hey, to the tow truck driver who's now there and has it hooked up and is lifting it up, trying to hoist it, says, put it back down. We're not taking it. Comes over, opens the door and says, sir, could you please step out? Says, we apologize for the inconvenience. Here's your identification back. On behalf of the Sheriff's Department, we apologize for disrupting your evening. Could you please slow down? They gave him his car back and off and went. Now, Terry was coloring way outside the lines of sanity because technically they have, if you pose a threat, reckless endangerment, if you can be posed as felony reckless endangerment, they can stop you. But there are certain individuals, there was an IRS agent who, in the Carson office in Southern California, about 4 years ago, someone, and her husband had just passed away about 3 years earlier. She says, honey, can you, you have a card reader here? She says, well, it only reads California driver's license. She says, well, it'll read this one then. And, after she got done, it came up on her screen. Marilyn could not see what was going on. The lady disappeared, went upstairs, came back down. There's a crowd around, the desk. Marilyn's just sitting there looking. Finally, the lady says, ma'am, at this time, it looks like everything's in order. You have a nice day. And Marilyn turns around and just without missing a step says, does that mean I don't have to pay tax anymore? And they all looked at each other and they wouldn't answer. But, it looks like I've used up my time and most of the or a large portion of the Q&A time. So sure. I'll turn it back over to Michael for your discretion.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we start with pressing star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Hi, Kent. Star 2. And Kent just did that, and he popped right up there at the top. Anyone else have a question or comment that you'd like to make with John here? Just press star 2 on your keypad. Those of you on Freedoms Radio, look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click into it and begin typing your comment or question. Outside that rectangle underneath, you'll see a place to put your name and whatever other information you'd like to share, and then hit submit, and it will pop up on my end. And I will be happy to give voice. I do have one question, John, that I'd like to ask, and it's just because I heard this the other day, and I just want to get your feedback on it. What would happen? What is the repercussions? What is the fallout if an IRS officer were to say to you or one of your students, if you don't void these trusts, I will bury you under the jail, not in it.
Did you ever notice how the bullies in the schoolyard talk because they can't walk? You know, people that throw the mouth around, they, most of the time, they do it because that's their last-ditch effort to try to salvage something that they've got going. I have heard just very recently, less than a year ago in November, I had a sheriff's deputy that was standing in front of me on a wrongful possession, adverse possession of a house, and the officer says, no, you can't, you know, you got to get out. He says, I'll arrest you, shoot you. I says, excuse me, ma'am. I'm on my own property. This is the trespasser. But she said, you know, the judge, you know, Judge Linda Hidalgo has already had a court order, and she technically, I says, she's a trespasser. She says she has a rental agreement. I says, I bought the house November 30th, and I was moving in December 1st. Actually, I'm here today on December 2nd. And I says, you're saying that you're going to come onto my personal property? She says, well, I don't know that. I says, then, oh, ma'am, that's probably a good idea for you to maybe check with some people. And you know, and I asked her nicely. I didn't tell her that, you know, that if she threw down, that I didn't know how it was going to turn out. But there's, I always try to ask questions. When somebody says, if he was to threaten, if an IRS agent was to threaten me, I'd say, why are you threatening me? That charitable literature trust isn't, I don't even have the authority for that. How can, you know, that's being administrated by someone else. The property is in that name, or this is in that name. Are you asking me to commit a federal crime? Is that what you want me to do? Is that what you're threatening me or trying to, or did you not understand that by asking me to do what you're doing about, that I don't have the authority to do that. I'm sorry. And, ask them so that they understand. Don't tell them. Ask them in a way, well, sir, you know, if you think this is wrong, let's look it up. You know, if I'm doing something wrong, show me the statutes. Let's look this up right now. He says, no, I'm just going to take you to jail. And I says, yeah, you're going to need a warrant for that. And you're going to have probable cause. So you're going to have to dig up all these things anyway. So I'll tell you what, let's dig them up together. And that way, if you find out I'm really doing something with malice with intent, you know, you know, help me out here, you know, you know, I won't even embarrass you by, making you, you know, throw me on the ground. I'll just, here, I'll hold out my hands and you can put handcuffs on me, you know, but, it's probably best for you and for me if we figure out what the law is and do this right, because otherwise, you know, you, if you make it into court and this thing gets overturned, that may not reflect well for you. And, you know, I'm going to need damages, you know, for the trouble that you've caused, you know, but if you can prove that you're right, then I'm not welcome to damages, am I? So let's look at this thing academically. That would be my response.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. We'll start with Kent and then Johnny Ringo's next. Go ahead, Kent.
Good evening, Mike. Good evening, John.
Good evening.
I wanted to ask a couple questions about the story that you told about Rose in California a number of years ago. First of all, I presume back then she hadn't done any status correction?
No. No, she was 61 years old at the time. And correcting your status back then was still something that was mostly there's a gentleman named G. Edward Griffin. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he wrote a very, very interesting book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. He used to visit my father's house when I was our house when back in the 60s. And he shared a lot of things, and that's where I first learned about the fact that the Federal Reserve had collateralized individuals' Social Security number for $1 million each to the Federal Reserve, and that being eligible, and his words were, being eligible for the benefits made you liable for the debt. But no, I did not know anything about, it wasn't in concrete when the situation with Rose happened.
Okay, so based upon that, now you said that from the time that they made, the two women made the first visit, was a year and something past before they came back all fired up. But you had done certain work with changing this to an early form of the charitable religious trust, et cetera. So assuming that had been done, why could they even come into the house to begin with? If that property did not belong to her, were they allowed into the house based upon the fact that they just didn't know this? Or was it because she herself had not corrected her status? And then if, in fact, you did change the house from her or her deceased husband's name into a charitable religious trust, if they were looking at this from an archival or a historical point of view of what she had done back then, and they could go into the past history, then that would give them a right to look at it. But then I would question you as to why they had to stop because it had been changed. Because if she supposedly committed any wrongdoing, it would have been done before that change was made. So could you just could you elaborate on that and explain how this all fits together?
You know, we never actually got that far. People in the field back then didn't have all the computers and, you know, the PDTs, portable data terminals, and everything that they have now. And when I showed her the, when she was showing the written copies of the statutes and the trust, and that nothing was, and they bullied their way in illegally. And they could have been shot for criminal trespass because they didn't have a warrant. Just because somebody has a badge doesn't mean they have the right to violate due process. And the issue with them and is that they. Rose was able to explain most of it herself by the time they got to the point where the issue had happened. And that was the thing that really I got to know Rose a lot better through all of that. But that was one of the things that you got a widow. Nobody wants to see a widow on the 6 o'clock news getting, you know, bullied like that. And that's a side point. But the thing is that once she propounded the evidence, she had it in writing, she had it prepared. It was in a binder in page protector so that she could tab through it. They all they all agreed that there was a problem and with what they were doing, and that they did not pursue her.
Well, let me ask it more pointed, if I could. So, in a case, generally speaking, if she was not able to justify everything that had been done in the past before she changed the property, would there be anything, even though the name of the property was changed, would there be anything to stop them from going back to your prior history and then claiming that you did do something wrong in your prior history and therefore the change of the property into the CRT at that time really was void or at least voidable?
There are up-and-coming young people. They're trying to do the best to show their bosses that they're doing a good job. And when they figure something out that's unique, figure out how to get that widget into that hole without using a press, or they just by using a nut or a fastener to and do it in half the time, oh, boy, is everybody impressed. So this thing about going back and saying that it was done to prevent this, there are some courts in some jurisdictions, and even the appellate courts in the Ninth and the Sixth are two of the appellate courts are two of the places where that's fairly common right now, that has been common over the years. That have said, well, you're obviously preparing and doing, you know, this. Well, what happened is that yesterday and today, we had a prosecutor on an IRS case say, write into the all six of the allegations there, into all six of the indictments, with malice, with and intent, committed the aforementioned. We had them write it into all six, and today we submitted a motion to have two of them dismissed automatically because they, if you, okay, you know, you want to do that? Tell you what, have, you know, Mr. Prosecutor, you know, if you're improper or pro se, and they, a lot of times they'll make you get a standby counsel now. But, what you do is, just ask your standby counsel to say, that they, added to the indictments that with malice, with intent. And what happens is that you didn't do it with malice or intent. So when it comes time for the jury instructions, the count fails.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay.
So you...
Next question.
Okay, so lastly, if one corrected their status by the process that we're talking about, what Greg has been doing, actually, now I'm not degrading anything that's being said about, I want to be clear, about charitable religious trusts and corporation souls. But if one was to correct their status, actually, there shouldn't be a need to have to protect any property that one has beyond that. Now, I realize the type of society we live in. I get everything you're saying, or at least I think I do. So I can see the benefit in doing that for simplifying one's life. But from a very simple point of view, wouldn't the correction of the status be enough to eliminate all of these other problems that are then being solved by having to put property, et cetera, into a charitable religious trust, corporation, soul, or private interest foundation?
You know what? That is an absolutely fabulous question. I am so glad you asked that. It's on one sliver of how things go with the IRS, and let's use the IRS as a, you know, that if you corrected your status and you did it before, you, shall we say, you get into any
unnecessary entanglement, shall we say. And you can, you're able to speak to it. You know, you've been on Justice Breshear's calls, and for that specific thing, you're correct. You wouldn't need to do anything else. But what happens if you're on the way home from that IRS interview, you have a car accident, somebody's killed, or somebody's injured, they decide to sue you? They'll come after everything you own. If you don't own anything, when I was at law in the 70s, we were taken over to a corporate meeting where there was no less than 46 attorneys in this huge boardroom. And they were trying to figure out how long they could exploit this couple's technology from Pennsylvania and saturate the market. And they were trying to figure out if they could saturate the market and then non-suit for no further infringement. But everybody in this room, their sole intent was to figure out, do they have family that can help contribute to their legal defense fund? What do they have? What's the assets they own? Can they borrow against? How much legal defense can they mount? Every one of these attorneys, their exclusive goal was to figure out what the bottom line on the dollar bill was, on the nickels, and how much there was to be had or not to be had. And I promise you that any attorney with assault will do a little bit of background, and once they find out you don't own or owe anything, they'll suggest to their clients that they just walk away. I was part of a liability suit 3 years ago. We put on a not-for-profit public event at a brand new park, Kickerillo Missioner Park, here in the Houston area, and I was the one that set up the main tent, everything. We had a slip and fall occur. When they found out, and they, this guy, it turns out it was a total setup. We wouldn't find that out till almost a year after the case was dismissed. Because somebody that had heard about it happened to be filming with their iPhone over 100 feet away and accidentally got the event on video, but showed us later. But they were suing for $28 million. They were suing the Houston Northwest Chamber of Commerce. They were everybody that was there. They Ted's Party Rentals that we got the tent from, the hospital that part of the tents the ground was on, all of this. And what happened was is that all eight other parties listed in this suit, I quietly gave them their out. Oh, I was the one that made that decision, or I was the one that made that, you know. So that they, the attorneys that were coming after us, finally, when they got down to little old me and they dismissed the other parties, we hadn't gone to court yet, they found out that, whoa, bully, broken tree feathers, Batman. This guy doesn't own anything. Why are we coming after him? You know, because everything is held by charitable religious trust and corp soul. And there was a time when we used to be a two-airplane family. We had the little compact Cessna 150, you know, the economy car. Remember, 3.8 gallons on autogas STC. And it took me an hour and 40 minutes to fly to Dallas from Houston. And we had the Rockwell Twin Commander, pilot, co-pilot, seven passenger. I may also be a pilot, an instructor pilot even, for the FAA. And, you know, and we had a 8,000 square foot garage. We had a little 2,900 square foot apartment with an 8,000 square foot garage. Not one thing was held by me. And what happened was that because I didn't also take a penny in that, which was something else, they couldn't come after me either. But the issue is that the sharks don't go after meat in the water if there's no meat.
Right. Well, I appreciate
that. Does that answer your question?
I do. I appreciate your answer. I was asking the question, though, from a purist point of view, but I understand what you're saying. Just clarify one other thing, and then I don't want to monopolize. You know, I'm sure other people have questions. Under the principle of like suing like, how would it be, though, really, that these attorneys and someone, since most people are walking around in a corporate capacity, the people that would try and sue you, how is it if you've corrected your status that they would even be able to get you in a courtroom to get a judgment to begin with?
Now, at this juncture, this is usually where I defer to GW. And,
okay.
But I'm I will say this. If you don't own anything, and your wife or your children or you should do something dumb, drop a knife on the floor and or break a glass and somebody steps on it and cuts their foot open and they lose their use of their foot or whatever, most people don't want to even bother to try to make a turnip bleed. So it's protection for your whole family and everybody that is with you for the corpse, soul, and religious trust. Right. Once you've got your status corrected, think about this. Your status is now an American national. The government, how they look at you, is now very, very different. It's almost in a diplomatic capacity. Both things are good to have. They don't necessarily mingle or negate or affirm the other. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And thank you. Thank you for your answers. Thank you for expounding on my questions and giving those answers. And character building aside, I would pray that you have a better day tomorrow. Thank you.
Well, you're very gracious. Thank you for your kind words.
All right. Our last caller tonight is Johnny Ringo with your questions. I do want to let everyone know that I'm running on short time now. So, Johnny, what you got? It's always good to hear from you. Johnny, incidentally, John, you may want to know that Johnny Ringo is the lead investigator for Mr. Tony Davis. And it's Johnny Ringo that compiled all the evidence, still has all the evidence, by the way, that proves Title 18 never was lawfully passed. So with that little introduction to the two of you, Johnny, go ahead.
I thank you.
If I was to say, an offhanded joke, if I was to say to you, well, I'll be your Huckleberry, Johnny, would that mean anything to you?
Yes, it would.
Okay, consider the said topic well covered.
I've earned that reputation throughout many of the federal judicial systems on this. And I don't want to be a smartass or anything, but I know that a lot of you individuals refer to the people that sit on the bench as judges. They are not judges. They're executive administrators. And the one question I have got for you, is the IRS a government agency?
They technically report to the Treasury, don't they? Let me ask the question, who do they report to?
They're an agency of the IMF.
They, Technically, because they do make a report to the Treasury Department, people consider them a government agency. They're not.
Okay. I agree 100%, and I've got verification for that. And I'm from northern Wisconsin and northern Michigan, and up in this country, we don't tolerate law enforcement too well, and they are well notified and put in their place at all times. And the IRS does show up at an individual around here, let's just say the neighbors have a very good relationship with one another, and they more or less meet the IRS or any federal agency face to face. And the government agency is generally outnumbered, and they back down every time, because I've been doing for over 20 years, and I've been asked to leave many courtrooms because I told the attorneys they are not judges, they're executive administrators, and the judges really turn red in the face, and then they ask the bailiff to remove me.
Sounds like you're having way too much fun, Johnny.
Well, in plain English, us old redneck boys up in this country, we don't stand for any of this government bullshit that they're trying to enforce, and they are met with force up around this country. I don't know about any other place, but I am a legal advisor for several law firms, and we've been having pretty good success throughout the entire country. As a matter of fact, I'll be down in Tallahassee in 2 weeks. But I appreciate you giving me airtime, and you guys got an excellent, excellent show.
All righty. Thank you so very, very much, Johnny. Michael, I see, but I run out of time. I apologize. And we'll just cover this prayerfully. John will be with us next Tuesday. It's always open-ended, just to make certain. He has a humongous plate that's full, and we were blessed that he can come on the call. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. Until next week, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.